Welcome to the Paint to Power podcast, where we have engaging, informed and interesting conversations on topics including women's health, the menstrual cycle, chronic pain, trauma, the nervous system, relationships and feminism. I'm Lisa Dion. I'm a women's health coach, facilitator and educator, supporting you on your journey of healing, recovery and moving into a place of personal power in your body and in your life. Okay, so hi everyone and welcome to episode 50. Episode 50 of From Paint to Power podcast. Welcome, Siobhan. I have a very, very special guest with me here today. And we're going to be talking all about this podcast episode is called Nutrition and Herbal Medicine for Menstrual Problems. And yeah, it's a topic that I'm personally interested in. It's a topic that I've personally journeyed as well. And I'm really excited to have an expert with me here today to have this conversation. So I have Siobhan Carroll with me today. So Siobhan Carroll is a fully qualified clinical herbalist and naturopath based in Clare in Ireland. She runs her own women's health clinic and teaches herbal medicine courses online. She is also a lecturer at the College of Naturopathic Medicine and works with the herbal medicine company A. Vogel as their medical herbalist and women's health expert specializing in menstrual health. And you can find her on Instagram at Nerdy Naturopath and at Siobhan Talks Periods on Instagram. And I'll be sure to link all of her information on her website in the show notes. And Siobhan is also a yoga teacher, a sea swimmer, a loving mum, a passionate cook, and a massive Harry Potter fan. She has a deep connection with plants and she is passionate about empowering people to look after their own health using the healing powers of nature. So you're so welcome, Siobhan, and thank you for that gorgeous bio you sent over to me.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. Thanks so much. Yeah, I'm delighted to be here. An amazing episode 50. That's incredible. Congratulations to you. That's really amazing to have so much of that wonderful info getting out to people. So well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, well, you're very welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Yeah, really, really happy to be here. And I am always really grateful for these opportunities. I have had since I was little this kind of deep desire to change the world. So it's such a lofty thing to say, but it's just, and I really feel like when I get the chance to talk to new audiences and talk to more people that one by one, I can kind of make a difference, you know? Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate this opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. No, thanks for coming on, because it's like the world of hormones and women's health and the menstrual cycle, it's such a big space, really. You know, people think it's really small and niche, but it actually isn't when you take a look through all these different lenses, and the work you do is a whole field, you know, in and of itself. And it's a really important aspect for people to understand and learn about. So yeah, I'd love to hear, I know I've read out your bio, but would you maybe introduce yourself in more detail professionally, what you do as a herbalist and a naturopath? I don't even know what that means. Well, I kind of have a sense of what that means, but for people who don't know what that means, what does it mean to be a naturopath?
So a naturopath, I also hadn't heard of a naturopath before deciding to become a naturopath. I was doing a yoga teacher training in India in 2012, so more than 10 years ago now, and I met a girl who was training in naturopathy school in Australia, and I said, wow, that sounds really cool. And that was kind of, as soon as I heard about it, I realized that was what I wanted to do. So as a naturopath, it's basically a natural health practitioner. It's a very broad term that, you know, covers a lot of different types of practices. You know, there can be naturopaths who are also acupuncturists. Naturopaths can use lots of different modalities of healing. So you could have a very different experience going to see different types of naturopaths, I suppose. As a herbalist, then specifically, I work with herbal medicine as my main modality of healing. I suppose the herbs are my main allies in supporting people in their own healing journeys. But that being said, the kind of basis of everything I always look at is nutrition, lifestyle, and how those things also need to shift in order for someone to achieve optimum health, regardless of what that is. I have found myself in this sort of women's health speciality, I suppose, because it's what interested me a lot, but wasn't what I set out to do when I finished studying. I studied for 4 years in Dublin at the College of Naturopathic Medicine. Then I went to America and worked for a herbal medicine company there and interned with them and got a lot of extra training on the ground, growing herbal medicines and making herbal products, which is really cool. And then I came home and I got a room to see clients in the Elbow Room, a gorgeous spot in Dublin, where, I don't know, they do a lot of, it was a yoga studio as well. They do a lot of pregnancy yoga and postpartum mum and baby yoga. And I just found myself, a lot of my clients all of a sudden who were coming to me were women with various different hormonal problems. And it became my clientele. It's what I seem to attract in without making a conscious decision to. And now it's what I focus on. That being said, I do still see men. I see a lot of children in my clinic too. A lot of both the women who've been seeing me for a while bring the rest of their families to see what happens. And the thing is, regardless of what we're working on, you know, I could have someone come to me with three different women, say with PMS, and we might have to look at different areas of their health regardless. But then I might have, you know, a man come to me with asthma and a woman with, I don't know, endometriosis. And in the end, the thing that works for both of them is removing gluten. So sometimes it's very different for each person. So even though I kind of specialize in that, I do see so many different people because it is an individual approach to each type of ailment that someone comes to me with, you know. So I work on one-on-one a lot with people, but I do find that, interestingly, the word doctor, which I learned when I was training as a naturopath, comes from the Latin to teach. And I do find that, unfortunately, it's not really what happens when we go to a doctor's office anymore. The whole system is just not set up for that anymore. You know, we don't have time. But when someone comes to see me in a consultation, I'd usually have an hour and a half for the first consultation. And then another hour for every follow-up, kind of every couple of weeks, four or five weeks later. And so I have that time to teach them lifestyle changes that are important, to maybe share some recipes of how they can incorporate different foods into their diet, share about, you know, sometimes I'll share meditations, different, you know, a yoga move that might be helpful for cramps or something, who knows what it might be. So I have more of that time in a consultation to teach. And I really love teaching. And so I have found that a lot of the things that I can share in a consultation are the kind of underlying basic things for health that I have been able to package them into general health things that I can share in trainings, which is how I got into sharing more herbal medicine trainings and courses like that. So even though it's very individual medicine, the underlying health principles are often quite similar. So that's how it kind of translates well to courses. And I really do like teaching courses like that. Particularly the other courses that I offer are herbal medicine focused. And I think it's really important. I'm really passionate about this idea of health freedom or health empowerment, where we can start to take back control of our health by understanding some really basic principles of things like herbal medicine. You know, back in the day, all of our ancestors knew herbal medicine. There was herbal healers in every family. So if you got a cold, you knew what to take. It wasn't always going outside to try and see a doctor if you could get an appointment these days, or to go to the pharmacy and just pick some pills to suppress the symptoms. So I'm trying to bring that back a little bit to get more people understanding some of these more basic first aid things they can do for themselves. They don't always need to even be going to see a herbalist, even if they want the natural option. There's so many things that you can actually treat yourself with. And it's the same for when it comes to the menstrual cycle. A lot of PMS, a lot of period pain can actually be sorted in a sort of a first aid way that people can teach themselves and understand themselves without even needing to see a herbalist. Then for more severe things like endometriosis and PMDD and PCOS and various different complaints, fertility issues, then it's worthwhile seeing a practitioner. But for a lot of things, simple education can really, really help, which again is why it's so great to have these conversations and be able to share this information with people.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that, Siobhan, and letting us know that there's like a lot that we can do ourselves. I think that's really empowering and liberating. And it reminds me of that, you know, that feeling of like, oh, PMS and menstrual pain are scary and confusing. But what you're saying is there is actually a lot of things that we can, like practical things that we can do to help ourselves. So for people who are listening to this, who saw the title and they're like, oh, like period problems, that's me, you know, where would you start with someone who has severe PMS or period pain in your work?
So it's not always the popular option and answer. But really, for PMS and period pain, diet can play a huge role. And it really is, you know, what we would imagine: cutting down on sugar, cutting down on processed food, eating more whole foods, eating more whole grains, eating more fresh fruit and vegetables, going organic. Even though it's more expensive, it's so important, because pesticides and herbicides are endocrine disrupting chemicals that really play absolute havoc with our bodies. So cutting out, opting for organic as much as possible is a really, really good option. Cutting down on sugar, particularly in that week where you're experiencing PMS, but it really does go across the month. You know, it's not just a 1 week solution. So because our hormones are shifting and changing the whole cycle, obviously, so they're being affected. So when we're more out of balance in, you know, our follicular phase, that's going to then cause more imbalance in our premenstrual days. So another thing that can be really, really helpful as a sort of general rule for everyone is to avoid plastic on the food, but also plastics that might be on our skin and our bodies in any different way. I saw you had a great episode that I listened to on cosmetics. Everyone should listen to that, because it's not just our food, it's what we put on our skin, and it's so important.
Yeah.
These xenoestrogens, or what they call endocrine disrupting chemicals, EDCs, if you look it up on, there's like a medical search engine called PubMed, and if you look up EDCs or endocrine disrupting chemicals there's so much research. It's just not made its way mainstream yet, and it's not made its way into doctor's offices. I heard a thing from Aviva Rom, who's one of my absolute idols in this field.
Yeah, she's great.
And she said it takes generally on average, for this is across the board, 17 years for research, scientific research, to find its way into doctor's offices.
Yeah.
Like, that's just insane. So so diet and those would be the biggest diet and lifestyle things. It's reducing those hormone disruptors from plastics, from non-organic food, reducing inflammatory things from processed foods and sugar, and eating more whole foods, you know, and whole fresh vegetables and more anti-inflammatory foods, particularly for period pain. I always recommend people coming off gluten. I find it so beneficial. The first time I heard of this, there was a study done in 2012 on women with endometriosis, and they found that 75% of the women who went on a gluten-free diet for 12 months, incredible amount of improvement in their pain and endometriosis symptoms across the board.
So for someone who's considering that, like, how long would you recommend that they try that for?
Always at least 3 months.
3 months, okay, yeah.
So if this study was a year, but I do find that within 3 months, the body starts to recalibrate.
Okay, yeah, it starts to clear out the...
And even though the study was done on endometriosis, I do find in practice in my clinic that it's helpful for period pain as well. And of course, so much of endometriosis goes undiagnosed. So if you have severe period pain and you don't have an endometriosis diagnosis, it could be a possibility, you know.
Yeah.
But regardless, for period pain, cutting out the gluten can help, it seems.
Yeah.
For, you know, I mean, 3 out of 4, that's just a big number to try.
It's a huge number. And like, okay, the gluten thing, because I've been there, and I might share my personal story with that in a second. I'm curious about, like, you know, like, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Can you have a little bit of gluten? Like, can you have the odd, like, you know, sourdough or like pizza slice or whatever? Or does it have to be completely gluten-free, totally?
Everyone is different. Okay. So I know myself, I can eat gluten, but I know if I'm eating gluten every day, I feel a bit crap.
Yeah.
And it affects my mood, and it makes me feel I can feel the difference in myself.
Yeah.
My daughter, though, if she has even one tiny bite of gluten, she comes out in a rash all over her whole body.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the thing with gluten is there are so many of these underlying gluten intolerances that present, say, in my case, where I feel like a bit crap and a bit sluggish, or in some other people's case where they come up with period pain, let's say. Or there can be the more extreme cases like my daughter where she comes out in a rash straight away. So yeah. I know I can't live her gluten, full stop.
That's like clearly an inflammatory thing of her gut, right? Yeah.
And it's a very, very quick response.
Yeah.
Which can actually be helpful because then you know what you have to cut out.
Yes. You're not confused. You're not like, what is this thing?
So for the rest of us who maybe have a mild intolerance to it and just can't cope with it. The thing with gluten is it's not that there's necessarily a problem with gluten. The problem is that it's in so many things and it's when you're eating it 3, 4, 5 times a day.
100%.
That's when the problem occurs. So the answer is it depends.
Yeah.
It depends on the person. But what I would suggest is the only way I know that gluten affects my body a little bit like that is because I have cut it out and reintroduced it.
Yeah.
So the only way you can really know if it's going to help your period pain is if you're going to cut it out for 3 months and then introduce a couple bits back in, maybe 1 month you eat gluten twice and see how it affects your period.
Yeah.
You know, and then maybe another month you eat it once a week and you see if it affects. It's all this like me search, you know, this sort of research.
Yeah. I love that. Me search.
I also got that from Aviva Rom, so I'm not going to claim it. She's amazing.
Basically, women's health in general, because we're left to our own devices, right? So, okay, that's so interesting, Siobhan. Thanks for sharing that because I know there's a lot of people on here who have tried it and my own friends and peers, and, you know, there's conversations about it. And my concern about it is that it can become, with diet, and I'm sure you see this in your own practice, is that it can become, especially for people who have chronic pain with it, like a form of dysfunctional eating, where it becomes this fear-based relationship with food. And if you eat one little bit of gluten, then you start to then freak out and have all of these negative thoughts, etc. And so I don't know, it's just an interesting thing what you're saying is like let yourself decide, try the 3 months, then see how it works. Like for me, I went off gluten for a few years and I did find it hard. It was hard. And I know it's easier these days because there are a lot of alternatives and a lot of foods that are gluten-free, but a lot of them are still quite processed. And I didn't really feel that comfortable with that. And so I was I found it a bit stressful, you know, especially like eating out, and it was difficult to enjoy myself and really feel pleasure with my food, you know, especially when you're out and about and that kind of thing. And so I just decided to reintroduce it. And I now know for myself that, like you said, that when I have that really stodgy, not great quality wheat, certain types of foods, I know what they are, like certain types of pizza. And like, if it's really doughy or sliced pan and things like that, you have to wait a while to see if it's going to be impacting your periods. But for me, one of my telltale signs is that my bowel movements will be different and uncomfortable or whatever, you know, and so I keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
And then of course, any kind of fatigue or if I feel bloated, you just kind of know, do you know, you get a feeling. And so I now have a bit of a sort of, I don't really eat very much gluten, but I have little bits here and there, like you say.
I think my biggest thing to share on this whole topic would be, I don't know, especially over the last couple of years, I've kind of stopped trusting anybody or anything outside of myself because everyone has a different opinion on absolutely everything. And, you know, you can say all these people who say, just trust the science, you know, well, what happens when the science has only been done on, you know, 18 to 25 year old men? How is that going to affect my body? You know, so it's really, it's if we can approach all of this diet and everything from a place of curiosity and flexibility.
Yeah.
Rather than from a black and white place, because that's when things get problematic. I see it so much now with the vegan movement, with gluten-free. It's like, it's an all or nothing thing, which isn't helpful, unless it is helpful and you're actually celiac or like my daughter with a skin issue and you really need to avoid it. But the second problem with that, which you touched on, particularly with the vegan movement and with gluten-free now, is there's so much processed crap that's going in place of these potentially really good foods for some people.
Yeah.
So it's about focusing on whole foods that are good for our bodies rather than, you know, a label of, you know, gluten-free
natural, right?
Oh, that's more where it's at. But at the same time, I do still recommend to my clients to go and try 3 months of gluten-free.
Yeah.
Just to see, because sometimes it completely gets rid of people's period pain.
Yeah. And that's it. It's totally worth trying things. Yeah. It's 100% worth trying things. Absolutely. And
yeah, but don't try it, you know, at the end of November for the month of December.
Oh, I know. December. Yeah, I know. It's really
like
hard.
Whatever it might be. Don't try it when you've got a wedding coming up. It's like, pick a time yeah. where it suits you to go, okay, I'm going to give this 3 months.
Maybe like January when it's kind of a boring time of year and there's nothing going on. Exactly. Like January, February, March. And then, yeah, that would be a good time to start actually. But that's a really good tip, Siobhan. And thank you for reminding us about our own agency and sense of self and coming back to your own intuition and gut feeling, right? There's a reason why it's called gut feeling, right? Like stay connected to your bowels and your gut and your digestion. And I think very often what can be interesting for people who do try the gluten-free thing is that they don't know they've been bloated all their life or they don't know they've had bowel problems all their life. I know for me, caffeine really impacts my digestion and I didn't know that until I came off it. And then I was like, oh, wait, this is actually normal and healthy, yeah. you know? Yeah. So it's totally worth trying all those things. And what was I going to ask you next? Oh, yeah. For the people who are like, when you say whole foods that are healthy.
Yeah.
So do you have any tips for people who are busy and have families and want to do the whole food thing, but because of society and lifestyle and work, etc., it can be challenging. So do you have any tips for those people?
I'm a big fan of batch cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also a big fan of really simple recipes. I love people like The Happy Pair and these sort of YouTubers who share these like 5 minute, you know, healthy curry recipe that you can just whip up really quite quickly.
Yeah.
And when you start, you know, a lot of people I meet will identify as, oh, I can't cook or I don't cook or, you know, it's not my thing. But once you start to follow a few simple recipes, it actually becomes easier to get into it, you know. I do really love batch cooking. I think it's a great idea. I always spend a good bit of time at the weekend cooking with my daughter and we'll batch cook some food, stick bits in the freezer and make loads of snacks for the week ahead for her.
That's, you know, lovely.
I don't really have an option because I'm not going to give her the processed gluten-free rubbish that's available on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But I'm also, you know, I also don't give her any sugar. So, you know, we make those things every week and we do it together and it's a lot of fun. And I think trying to make it fun and doing it with your family, like kids are, like she's been cooking with me since she's been able to stand. Like if they really enjoy getting involved. So for people who are busy with families, just get them involved. For people who are really busy and not at home a lot, that's tricky. You know, I did live that all go corporate life where I was only in my bedroom at nighttime at one point, you know, so I do know what that's like too, eating out. But nowadays it's so easy to find healthier options when you're eating out, you know. It's just about opting for things that are less processed as much as you can. And again, it's like it's just one good decision at a time as much as you can. And I think one thing you touched on earlier, which is so important, is the not to be beating yourself up about it, because I've done this with myself for years about food, you know, of what's right to eat and what's not to eat. And the stress is also going to have an impact on your body. So just relax a little bit and, you know, be curious and flexible and, you know,
it doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah. And the stress can as easily cause as many problems, if not more. So
I totally agree with that. And it's something that I see in my clients and my own professional students as well. They say that a lot, like that perfectionist mindset, we don't even see it. It's there because it's so in our culture.
Yeah.
And then because of the lack of support, say in the medical system with menstrual difficulties or just lack of research, and we are left to our own devices. And then, you know, that is a lot of responsibility to absorb, you know. So I love that what you said, one good decision at a time. That's a really great life mantra. I'm going to put that on post-it.
I should do.
It's so good. And I was thinking like, because I'm thinking about, like, I really have had to give myself the permission to, when I'm in a restaurant, to order that side salad and order the side of vegetables, even though it's going to be an extra few quid on the bill, you know, because I think it does make a difference. And I do know as well that when you have like more greens with your food or before your food, it's good for blood sugar balance, isn't it? And also fiber, which is all amazing for your hormones.
Yeah. Blood sugar balance is one of the most overlooked aspects of health, in my opinion.
It's
so important for so many things. There's a really great Instagram page that I just am obsessed with called
Glucose Goddess.
And I just keep putting so many people over there. I'm like, go look at these graphs. They're so fascinating, you know? So I think, yeah, it's so helpful for our hormones, but so many other aspects of our bodies and our health as well. as you know, normally we would just have thought of blood sugars being associated with diabetes, but it's so, so much more than that. Mm. So yeah, just having a salad, an extra bit of vegetables or a side salad with your meal can help, even if you're having a, you know, gluten-filled, dairy-topped pizza, you know, that's going to be helpful as well. So
yeah,
the thing is with nutrition on its own, it is really helpful, you know, and that's why I love herbal medicine as well, because it gives this extra little support. There are these wonderful little, just these herbal allies who are there to help us out when it's impossible to be, you know, 100% perfect in our diets and in the lifestyle that we're in. There is no way, there's just absolutely no way we can avoid all these endocrine disruptors that are out there, you know? And then there's one, you know, that, like, I love painting my nails and I'm not going to stop. Yeah. And there's only so many colors you can get in the natural ones. So I do paint my nails sometimes, and I know that that's not great, but I do it anyway.
20, I know. And the natural ones chip very quickly unless, you know.
So bad. So, we all have to make our decisions of what we do and don't want to compromise on, you know, and then it's not a compromise because it's an active choice that we are making.
Exactly.
And even when it's a choice we're not making, like, there's chemicals in our air and there's stuff in our water that we can't filter out maybe, or there's, you know, just typing on a plastic keyboard is plastic and that's still getting into your system, you know, whatever. It's just everywhere. So having those herbal medicines as extra support is just really wonderful, I think, you know.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about that. I'm just going to tell people, because you probably do this as well, going back to the batch cooking thing, I remembered that I bought a glass, I think they're glass Tupperware. Mm. So it's not plastic, like the glass Tupperware, and you can get them in IKEA. I'm pretty sure I got them online in IKEA. You can get them all in all different sizes as well. So really deep dishes for putting in the freezer. And they're great because you can put in all of your stews and soups and things into there. And then you're not absorbing the, especially if you put things, if you put warm food in plastic containers, that's also not good, right? So just a little tip for anyone looking for new containers.
A really, really simple tip as well for reducing the plastic is whenever you're getting a takeaway coffee, just say no thanks to the lid.
Oh, yeah.
So that lid is, you're basically heating up the plastic and the endocrine disruptors are dripping back into your drink and you're just having a big slurry of it. So just take the lid off. It helps, you know.
Or go into the cafe and relax and get a
That would be really good. That would be the best for sure.
Get a nice mug.
I also did a good bit of research on other things to freeze with, because in freezer space, etc. I do so much batch cooking, and silicone is a good thing to freeze with.
It's not
so great to cook with, because it can break down at certain temperatures.
Oh, so if you bake with it, it can be...
Yeah, baking with it is maybe not the best idea, but...
Okay. But freezing is okay.
It doesn't break down at all at cold temperatures or room temperature. So that's another one that's helpful.
Oh, good to know. Okay. Okay, so moving on to herbal medicine. So what is herbal medicine, Siobhan? Tell us.
What is herbal medicine? It's basically using any kind of plants in a medicinal way, I suppose. So, for example, you could use garlic in your cooking and it's nutritional, but you can also use garlic as a medicine, or ginger. Let's talk about ginger specifically because it has brilliant menstrual applications. Ginger is a really common herb that we'd use in cooking. It's also something that we'd, like, you know, chop into a tea for when we've got a sore throat or a bit sick. So that's using it as a herbal medicine, making those kind of herbal teas. But ginger is also really anti-inflammatory, and it's got this affinity with the womb. So it's an emmenagogue. It helps to increase blood flow to the womb and bring on delayed periods. It just does so many different things, but it's also something that we use in our kitchen for cooking, you know? So herbal medicine is that application of plants in a medicinal way. That's what I would call it.
Brilliant. Okay. And so, because I'm thinking about, like, fresh ginger and then also ginger in capsules. So is it that you're taking the capsules, or that you're taking it, that when you use it as a medicine, is it that you're having the tea and you're grating it, or does it matter?
You can just, you know, you can add extra ginger into your cooking, and that can be a medicinal use of it. It's more about it's more about the intention of how you use the medicine. Herbal medicines as capsules can be helpful in some cases, and definitely as tinctures are. Tinctures are basically a way of preserving herbal medicine. So you get the fresh plant material, cover it in alcohol to preserve it, and the alcohol extracts the phytochemicals in a similar way that the hot water extracts phytochemicals. So that's different ways of making medicines and preserving them. So that's the only real reason why we would use a tincture as opposed to the fresh plant material. It's just a different way of extracting different phytochemicals and preserving them. So, you know, eating fresh cloves of garlic or picking nettles and making nettle soup, you know, these are still can be, it's still herbal medicine. You know, yeah. I always joke when I'm out, like when I used to be out a long time ago, maybe for a gin and tonic, and I'd get like an elderflower tonic with it. And I'm like, oh, herbal medicine, you know, so, like it's whatever you want it to be.
Because it is a huge field of study, because I've come across those herbal books, and I know a few other people who've done herbalism training, and it's just a huge, like, I mean, it's a whole other language, isn't it, Siobhan?
It really is. Yeah. I mean, a really great way to get started is as a, you know, a herbalist is really just somebody who is with plants in a herbal medicine type of way. You know, it's not necessarily a clinical practitioner, but a really great way to get started is, you know, you can be a herbalist who knows 7 plants really in depth, you know, but yeah, in my training, I've learned hundreds of different plants and all their Latin names and all their various different uses and phytochemicals and applications and actions and things like that. So it is a big field of study, and it's one where it's been actually really, I think, really healing for me. And I'm only just realizing this now as I say it, but having talked so much about perfectionism and things like that, I used to be the kind of person who I only ever really wanted to do something if I felt like I knew everything about a topic and really was, you know, knew what I was going to be talking about because I was well versed in it. But the more I study herbal medicine, the more I realize I don't know. And the more that then translates to every other topic is the more we know, the more we know we don't know.
Yeah.
So it really is a huge field of study. And I think I could be studying plants for the rest of my life. And I could probably just study one plant for the rest of my life and still be learning.
Wow. And I've heard herbalists say that they have relationships with the plants. Is that something you relate to? As in, like, you feel connection with them? Like, you feel...
Yeah, I could be out for a walk and I'm like, oh, hey, girl, you're looking good. So, yeah, definitely. I do. I've never really been an animal person. I'm definitely more of a plant person. And I think it's a good way for people to understand it, because a lot of people who are animal people really, like, you know, they have a real relationship with their pets and their animals. And I feel like that. I feel that way with my plants because they all have different energies and they all have different properties and things. But even just sitting with the plant, I do a lot of plant meditations, and it's something I share more of in my, I have this 6-week Herbs for Health herbal training that I launched this time last year, and it's still available, and we do like plant meditations where you get to kind of sit with plants, and it's very easy to start to develop that relationship yourself. So if that's something you're interested in, all you need to do is simply make yourself a cup of tea and sit with it and close your eyes and just open your field to the plant and start to communicate, you know, in that very subtle realm.
Yeah, no, I totally 100% believe in all that stuff. I think that's all really powerful. It's about being open, isn't it, receiving guidance, and inspiration comes from in spirit, right?
Yeah.
And guidance from all these different places, and plants are living beings, and they're so connected to our ancestral lineage and our Irish history and culture and all that. So bringing it back to women's health and the womb and the menstrual cycle, what comes to mind in herbal medicine with these areas?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, ginger is a great one that people would have great access to. For ginger, I would recommend, if you have period pain, drinking 3 kind of strong cups of ginger tea a day for
during your period pain,
days like that you have the pain. Yeah, yeah. Or maybe if you know your period's coming and it's always painful, maybe the day before as well.
And that would be fresh ginger, like you'd grate it and chop it up.
So what I would do is make what's called a decoction. So it's different than just a cup of tea, to make a really strong herbal ginger drink, because it's a root rather than it's a rhizome rather than a leaf, which is usually what we'd use to make tea or an infusion. A way to get more of the phytochemicals out of it is to make a decoction, which is basically just putting the ginger and some water in a pot. Put the lid on it to keep the phytochemicals in. Same if you're ever having a cup of tea, always put a lid on it to keep the phytochemicals in, because otherwise they evaporate. And then you can bring it to the boil and simmer for 10 to 15 minutes. And that's going to make a really, really strong ginger drink.
10 minutes boil on the hob, like.
Okay. Yeah, on the hob, yeah. And then you can leave it to cool and you can just mix it with some boiling water again and have it sort of to heat it up, or you can just heat it up on the hob again and drink
it. Oh, that's funny. So you'd have it, you could have that then on the hob for a couple of days and then
that's it. You can just leave it there. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good.
Drink out of it. So that'd be a really great one.
And that's fresh ginger, not tea bag, not like the Barry's ginger tea. Not, yeah. That's different, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
The problem with that tea bags is a lot of the time the plants have been sitting there for a long time, and usually mm-hmm. after about a year after harvest, you lose a lot of the medicinal benefits from a plant. They mm-hmm. just start to get old, you know. So yeah. fresh is great. I mean, dried ginger is really, really helpful for lots of things too. It has more of an affinity with the digestive system and it can be more heating as well. So I'd go with fresh ginger because it's
fresh. Easy, yeah, you know? It's very easy to get. You can get it in any supermarket.
That's it. It's everywhere.
So
if it's not organic, I'd peel it. And if it is organic, you can leave the skin on when you're boiling it.
And do you store it in the fridge?
There's lots of various different ways you can store it that I have heard are helpful. You can put it in a jar, you can put it in water in a jar and it keeps longer. There's all those different sort of hacks for storing ginger for longer periods. But yeah, you can keep it in the fridge or you can keep it on the counter. Okay. It doesn't go all
packed with you. I will say, like, it is one of my go-tos as well. Like, it is a go-to for me for period pain. And I went to see an acupuncturist and she recommended I have it in the morning first thing to spark the inner fire, she said.
Yeah.
I think the digestive fire she meant by that, like to get your system going. Yeah, but I think it was a bit much to have it every single day. So I like this idea of just having it on the days of your period or the day before and then having that on, just doing one batch of it on the hob. And then you can just, when you're going in and out of the kitchen, you can help yourself as opposed to having to constantly grate new ginger all the time.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. Okay. You can also, so once it's boiled, you can just store it in a glass jar in the fridge and then it'll last for kind of, you know, 5-6 days probably.
Okay, yeah.
So it depends on the plant and it just depends on what you're treating, whether you should take something every day. So if you're using ginger to support your digestion, it is beneficial to take it every morning. Mm-hmm. But if you're using ginger for period pain, you only really need it on the days when you've got your period.
Okay.
Pain.
Okay.
But then another plant, say, that I recommend a lot is called Agnus castus, also known as Vitex. It's just one of the most helpful plants when it comes to women's health that I have found. Probably one of my most used herbs in my clinic. I use it as a tincture. You can get it as a tincture in Ireland in the health food shops from a brand called A. Vogel, who I work with. And it's a really brilliant tincture. I don't actually know of other brands that do it, but any kind of tincture of Agnus castus is really great because they're these kind of hard berries from this tree called the chaste tree. And they're not really like ginger, you know, you wouldn't just be using them for cooking. But the way it acts on the hormones, so it acts directly on the pituitary gland and it helps to rebalance the hormones at a kind of quite subtle level and can rebalance that picture where it's often higher estrogen and compared to lower progesterone, or what people call estrogen dominance or estrogen excess. It can help to bring that back into balance so that we don't have PMS and so that we don't have as much period pain. It's slow acting though, and it does need to be taken every day and usually for kind of at least one cycle, but usually 3 to 6 cycles before you really see the benefits. So you're taking it for a fair bit of time. The dosage that they recommend on the bottle is like 15 drops 2 times a day, but herbalists often find that it's actually really helpful to take 30 drops first thing in the morning, which is a lot easier for people to remember and get their doses in. So you can just measure out the drops from the bottle, you know, the little dropper lid on it, and just measure out those 30 drops and you take it first thing in the morning. The reason that's helpful is because it's when the pituitary gland is most active. So it's working directly on the pituitary gland. So,
And you take that with a little bit of water.
You can just mix it with some water. Yeah, you can you can just knock it back without the water. I call them like my breakfast. Breakfast shots.
Pet it into your mouth. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Okay, I'm going to link as well. Siobhan has a little mini course on this particular herb in your website, so I'll make sure I'll link that as well for people to sign up to. And I have used what I found really interesting from me, like watching your video on that was. I didn't, because I've heard of this herb before and I've worked with not herbalists, but a homeopath who prescribed this for me as well. But I didn't realize you had to take it every single day for about, what did you say, 3 months? So it's different with the ginger that's in and around your period pain, whereas the Agnus castus is to take every day, for like 3 months, like the gluten, give it a go for 3-4 months, see how you get on.
And sometimes some people find that after 3 months they can come off it. and their periods are, you know, all of a sudden they're regular for the first time, and it's really helpful for irregular periods as well, and they've no PMS and they've no period pain, and they come off it and it all comes back, so they can go back on it. It's really safe to take it long term, and that's fine. Some people do benefit from that, but other people, after 3 months, they come off it and their symptoms don't come back, and it's just fixed the underlying hormonal imbalance, and they're good to go. So it depends on the person, but because it's acting on the hormonal system, and the hormonal system is so slow to change, it does need to be taken on a daily basis over that longer period of time. Whereas ginger, the main action that ginger is helping is that it's anti-inflammatory. It has a natural painkillers in it, and it's got that kind of blood moving action in the pelvic region. So it's just a different effect, and the body works much quicker in those kind of processes than the hormonal system, which is slow acting.
Got you. Okay. That's really good advice. Any other herbs or things?
Yeah. So again, like a food that I consider a herb is flax seeds and, or linseeds, same thing. And they are full of phytoestrogens. So they're plant estrogens that work different than the xenoestrogens that we talked about, but they're really, really beneficial for balancing our hormones. And it's recommended to take them in the dose of 2 tablespoons a day to be medicinal. So that's a lot. Like, if you try adding that into your porridge or something, it's not that little sprinkle that, you know, people might put on their porridge. It is quite a big amount. You can add it into smoothies. I often like blend it up in the morning and just add it into different foods, into some soup, put some of it into my porridge, whatever it might be. But just get the 2 tablespoons in every day, 2 level tablespoons, not like, it doesn't have to be heaped, but 2 proper tablespoons a day of the flax seeds is what's needed for that hormone balance. Hormone balancing effect, like with what we said about ginger also being great for the digestive system and for, you know, coughs and colds and all sorts of things. It's what I love about herbal medicine, like compared to pharmaceuticals that have this extremely long list of side effects, herbs always have these side benefits. So you know, you've got your flax seeds, they're also helping your microbiome, they're also helping your, they're full of omega-3s, great for your brain, so it's going to, you know, particularly with the microbiome, have a secondary impact on our hormonal health. You know, there's this whole field of study, I don't know if you've looked at it before, of this, what they're now calling the estrobilome within the microbiome, where there's different bacteria in our microbiome that digest and metabolize estrogens and convert estrogen from one form into another in our bodies. And it's just, it's incredible all the different things that are slowly being discovered about our bodies and our bodies, and I suppose our colony that we have within us of all these different microbes that play a really beneficial part for us, but we need to feed them good food. And that's again why reducing sugar can help, because that's going to put our microbiome out. But the flax seeds then are going to help our microbiome to be healthier, so that it can do its job of helping to balance the hormones as well.
That's fantastic, Siobhan. Thanks for reminding me of that. It is something that I go in and out of taking, actually the 2 spoons as well. And I'm currently on an out of that routine right now, and the reason is because Super Value didn't have it anymore. They only had I need to go to the health food store. I'm in a different region now. I moved recently, and so I'm going to get them. And what I learned as well was that, I'm going to ask you if this is true, it's better if you get the seeds instead of the pre-milled ones, and then grind them yourself. So I was grinding them in my smoothie blender thing in the morning, and I would take 2 spoons, and instead of putting, when I make porridge, instead of having lots of the oats or oatmeal, they say in the States, I have kind of half and half oats and then the self-ground linseed, and also some chia seed. And I would, on a really low heat, make porridge.
Yeah, I would add the flax seeds, the linseeds in after you've heated them though. Again, that they're really delicate and they can oxidize really fast. So that's why you don't want to blend them in advance, because they oxidize and they lose a lot of their omega-3s and they can become rancid very quickly.
Okay.
Heating them can also make them a bit rancid. That being said, I do bake with flax seeds a lot. They're really great egg replacer if you're avoiding eggs, or just really great way to get extra fiber into a recipe. I use them a lot and I cook with them a lot, but they do become quite rancid. So I wouldn't be doing it every morning with the porridge unless it's on a kind of very low heat. But I would add that, I would just, if it's simple, add the flax seeds after.
At the end,
you're going to get more omega-3s.
And, I'll tweak that one. Yeah, but it's such a handy thing to have. And I love that you grind them up and then you, throughout the day, you put them into different things, whether it's, Yeah, I like that. Soup is a good idea because you don't really notice it. It just thickens it up, right? Yeah. Okay.
And you can also just mix it with some water and like knock it back.
Yeah. And does it always have to be ground or can you also have them whole?
You can have them whole, but for a separate purpose. Having them whole is really great for constipation, but they don't really break down in our system that well. So they will also often just, what happens when you soak them in some water, they get this kind of slimy thing on the outside like chia seeds do, but chia seeds are more easily digestible than flax. It's called mucilage and it's really, really great for feeding the good bacteria, but also for as just a kind of a like sweeping through motion of our digestive tract. So for anyone who doesn't poo every single day, they can do that because that means you're constipated. You don't have one bowel movement a day. And it's also something that pops up really commonly as a part of PMS is that kind of premenstrual constipation. So seeds, you can take those, you can be taking your 2 tablespoons of flax seeds a day for balancing your hormones. Mm. And it is also going to help your digestion and increase that fiber. But you can also take that tape, you know, maybe a tablespoon of that whole flax seeds, covered them in boiling water, leave them to soak for at least 3 hours.
Boiling water.
Yeah, you just put some hot water, boiling water, whatever, just hot water over it. Let them soak in that for, at least 3 hours. You can leave them overnight even. Mm-hmm. And you get loads of that mucilage. It's real slimy. You swallow it down and that's going to be really helpful for constipation.
A good cleanse, a good natural decongestant. Yeah, I love that. Wow, Siobhan, there's so much there. Is there anything else that you'd like to offer for people to think about in terms of period pain and PMS or PMDD?
The last thing I suppose that I'll share, just being an Irish, two Irish ladies on an Irish podcast at the time of year that we're at, is I'd love to talk about nettle because it's a wonderful plant to drink when you're menstruating. Mm. It's a great plant to drink in general as a tea or eat. But yeah, particularly for when we're menstruating, it helps us to rebalance our minerals that may be lost during that time. And with that kind of blood loss, especially if you've got heavy periods. And yeah, it's just such a gorgeous plant for the menstrual cycle. It's also antihistamine. It's also, you know, it helps to expel excess uric acid from our body. So it's great for things like arthritis. So it does so many different things, but it's just really, really nourishing. And I think a lot of the times we can be looking at like, you know, what can we take for our period pain and what can we take for our PRS? But, you know, just going for something really basic like nettle as a kind of an underlying nourishing tea can be so helpful as well.
And is that something you would have to go out and get from the wild, or can you get nettle tea in the health food store?
Yeah, nettle tea in the health food store is fine. Okay. It's different when you taste it. You know, nettle tea and fresh nettle tea, they're just worlds apart. I love fresh nettle tea. It's so delicious.
So how do you, like, okay, this might sound like a really basic question, but how do you get nettles without hurting yourself?
Yeah, on a pair of gloves. There's this whole technique that you kind of pick up from the bottom and you go against the kind of little bits that are sticking out, the little hairs, that you can technically pick them without stinging yourself. And it's also not a problem to sting yourself. It's actually a really old cure, is this sort of nettle lashing, where it can get rid of allergies, it can get rid of pain, tendonitis, all sorts of things. But that being said, not everyone wants to have nettle covered fingers all the time. So just stick on a pair of gloves and use a scissors, and once the nettles are heated, they lose their sting. So
it's the same as the ginger. Do you put it into a pot of water and boil it for
not the same as ginger? You would just make it like a tea, because the decoction that I mentioned for ginger is just for roots or berries. So if you're making something that's just a leaf, you pick up the fresh tops, not the whole plant, because it can be really stringy and dense. You get the leaves, the fresh leaves at the top, and yeah, just put them. I love using like a French press. That maybe hasn't been used for coffee. I mean, if it's been used for coffee, and I don't know if it might have a bit of a taste of coffee off it. If that bothers you, then use a different one. But if it doesn't, it's fine. And yeah, just cover it with boiling water and put a lid on it and let it infuse for 10 to 15 minutes, and then you can drink it.
Lovely. Oh, I'm going to have to try that. I'm in Wicklow, so I'm sure I can get my hands on
some. They're all over the place at this time of year. Yeah, they really are. And I do have a free training that I just launched this week, which is really exciting. And it's all about the magical plants of Ireland. So I talk a lot more about nettle in that and a lot of other plants just that are nice to know about beer. And
well, I was going to...
Mugwort as well, which is another wonderful Irish plant that I use a lot for menstrual health.
Super, Siobhan. So you've got a course, did you say? And you're taking clients.
I'm taking clients. So I see most of my clients online. I occasionally see people here in my home. I have a home clinic, but not many people are coming into the the wilds of the very small village I live in Clare at the moment. So I do see people online and it works really well, the online consultations. So my website is nerdynaturopath.com and I have a whole load of different things you can choose from there. But you can also just send me an email at hello@nerdynaturopath.com. That'll get to me. Or you can message me on Instagram. I do monitor all my DMs there. So that's another way you can get me to book an appointment. And then, yeah, things that I'm sharing for free kind of herbal training opportunities. There's this Magical Plants of Ireland training. It's just a 45-minute class, like a sort of a Zoom class with about 8 different plants that you can learn more about that grow around us in Ireland. But really, they're plants that grow around most people in, you know, from America and all of Western Europe. They grow everywhere, these plants, a lot of them like nettle. And yeah, I have a 6-week training program if you want to kind of dive deeper, called Herbs for Health, where I cover, I have a whole, one whole week is related to menstrual health, herbs for the menstrual cycle. And then we look at herbs for digestion and immunity and the nervous system. And yeah, it's a really nice program if anyone wants to dive deeper with that. And I've just started a show on Instagram Live because it's an easier way to start than doing my own podcast. So I'm just on Instagram Live every Monday at 1 o'clock, and I've 2 weeks in now, and I've got a friend coming over and we're going to do a talk all about foraging next week. And I did one about, you know, the best way to make herbal teas and things like that was the first episode. So that's all on my Instagram page, and it's really easy to find. And so there's just lots
that's of on your Nerdy Naturopath or Siobhan Talks
yeah,
Periods.
That's on my Nerdy Naturopath page. And then on Siobhan okay. Talks Periods, I have every week I have a blog that is published on A Vogel's website, and it's all about various different things related to periods. So the one that I've just recorded today is about thrush and why it might be more commonly that women more commonly get it sometimes around their period. So it's really, it's not just about herbal medicine. It's very broad ranging around menstrual health. But yeah, that's on the Siobhan Talks Periods page. And I share lots of different videos from the kind of longer video blogs that I make once a week as well.
Gotcha, there, so. Yeah. Yeah, no, Siobhan has an amazing Instagram account with so many really fun videos and education. And I really encourage you to go and check that out. And I will make sure to link all of her details on her website on the show notes as well. And then you can sign up for her newsletter and her courses. The courses sound amazing. And I'm assuming they're for just people in general and also professionals who want to learn about herbs.
Yeah, absolutely. They're really helpful for just anyone who wants to learn how to bring more herbs into their life. And I've had various different practitioners join as well, like Reiki practitioners and yoga teachers and nutritionists who just want to learn how to add a little bit of herbal medicine into their practice too.
Lovely. So yeah, that's really great. Thank you so much, Yvonne, for joining us. It's been such a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you, Lisa. I really enjoyed it.
See you soon. And thank you everyone for listening, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Bye. Thank you for joining today's conversation. This community, these topics, and the stories I share are not possible without all of you being part of the journey. If you are interested in getting more support for your own personal process, head on over to my website, lisadeyoungcoaching.com, to book a consultation call with me. Or you can sign up for a free course there as well. And as always, please like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. Lots of love for the week, and see you next time.